I'm not shy. And together, we've never shied from a challenge. Today, the time has come to make another tough choice. As much as I love this job and will always love this city and its residents, I've decided not to seek re-election. This has been the job of a lifetime, but it is not a job for a lifetime.
All right. I guess not, because he quit.
He's done.
What is
it?
Now he's still mayor. He's still going to be mayor until April of next year when we swear in a new mayor.
That's right.
But we swear at a new mayor starting the day after we swear in a new mayor. So that's how that goes.
That's kind of how it does go in Chicago. You're absolutely right.
Paul Vallis wants to be the guy we swear at starting in April of next year.
You've been swearing at me for years.
Yeah. So what? All right. Let's talk about this. Were you shocked?
No, not really, because I know people who know people who know him, and you know, more than a handful have been saying really over the last actually couple months that he might not stay in. Although I thought he was going to wait probably until maybe a little longer until November before making a final decision. So I was surprised that he announced it as early as he did, You know, I've been hearing rumors from, you know, I think legitimate insiders, so to speak, who said, hey, don't be surprised if he doesn't run.
What would you chalk it up to in terms of the largest issue weighing on him? What is it, the Laquan McDonald issue? Was it poll numbers? Was it personal? Where would you place it?
I think it's a combination. You know, it's for the mayor to explain why he elected not to run, but clearly the city wants a change, and certainly the polls reflected that. And you know, no one's ever accused him of being politically naive. So at the end of the day, I mean, the poll numbers were pretty. I mean, even these so-called Michael Sachs poll, I think he was in the 30s. And so at the end of the day, you know, he probably, you know, the writing was on the wall. But there may have been other reasons.
But 30s gets you.
But
30s gets you to the runoff. And all you have to do, I mean, I think you would agree with this. I'm assuming, Paul, that really the most important thing right now is to be in the top two. Right. I mean, winning this thing outright is kind of unlikely in a gigantic field. Mm-hmm. We'll see how the field winnows down.
I plan on winning it outright.
You know? Okay.
And let's say I'm hoping that I win it outright.
Yeah, no, I know everybody is. But
right.
I mean, just,
right.
You know, in a real way. So the reality is that he had the most amount of money by a lot.
Clearly.
Right.
Yes,
I mean, $10 million. And everybody's saying it's about probably $1.5 million race that people are trying to raise here, just to be competitive in it. So he was well ahead of that. A big question is, where does that money go? Does he give it back? Does he move it to other candidates? Do you have a suspicion? Because all of a sudden now, names like Valerie Jarrett are being floated. Luis Gutierrez is being floated.
So many names. It's unlikely.
My attitude is, if you didn't have the guts to challenge him while he was in office, then what makes you think any of these candidates are going to have the guts to make the tough decisions that need to be made to move the city forward? So at the end of, you know, for me, you know, I'm not even speculating who's going to be in and who's not going to be in. I always felt, not based on my own intuition, but from what people had told me, that he very well might not run. But, you know, I wasn't running this campaign, this campaign wasn't about him. This campaign was about offering fresh and realistic solutions for the future of the city. And what I've always felt that my path to victory was to remind people of my record, just not here but elsewhere, because I think it's been a record of accomplishment. And the city needs someone in the mayor's office who not only can run the city but also has a real compassion for the community. I mean, all the communities. I mean, 78 schools that I built over the years, 80% of them were in the poorest communities in the city. And also, you know, I always felt that this election would be won by the candidate who could best articulate the problem-solving solutions for dealing with this issue of rising crime, lack of quality.
All right. Let's get to specifics here, because the one thing that drives me most crazy, Paul, is like anybody who listens to radio or watches television and they hear politicians just kind of give you a big cherry pick and wide look at this. Mm-hmm. In reality here, You had this just this weekend alone. You had an 11-year-old shot on the south side in the stomach.
Right.
You had a 17-year-old shot. You had three people shot within a few minutes of each other down in the Wild 100s. You had this grad student at Northwestern shot and killed going to an L station on Howard Street and Clark Street.
Yeah.
You've got, I mean, what are we going to do about this?
All right, so let me respond to that, and if I can have more than a minute to do that.
Sure.
Look, you know, I in April articulated what needed to be done to strengthen the police department and to provide an infusion of resources right now so that the police have not only the manpower but also the experienced manpower, and I'm referring to manpower in the biblical sense, so that it has the resources to be effective. You know, they gutted the Texas division down to from 1,200 to 700. Now they're getting back to 1,200, but most of those new detectives are inexperienced. You know, they still haven't filled those police vacancies because the attrition rate is almost as great as the recruitment of new police officers. So what I said very specifically, and I'll point out that in the plan I articulated, I talked about how to build the police strength and how to improve training and how to create a pipeline for new police officers that can come from the community. I laid all that out. And sometimes if I'm accused of anything, it's about offering too much detail. But I said specifically what the police department could do is they could tap in to the 6,000 retirees that are out there, and they could do what New York did, what London did, what Denver did, what Dallas did. They could bring experienced officers who know the neighborhoods, who know the communities, back into the ranks, particularly working in the detectives division. Because when you're only clearing 5% of the shootings, and you're only clearing 17% of the murders and 9% of the carjackings, well, you know what? You got, in many cases, you've got the same criminals, repeating crimes. So at the end of the day, that was a very, I mean, look at the, they're probably going to spend $100 million more in overtime, than they originally budgeted for, simply because they're moving police officers around.
All right, so
that was one. That was one.
So you want more police officers? So what are we talking about? 1,000 more?
Well, look, I've called for the hiring of 14,200 police officers. Let me point out, though,
and that would be about 1,000 more, maybe 1,200 more, something like that.
Yeah. Although they're far short of even that because they haven't filled even the vacancies that are in the current budget.
And you have furlough issues and all that. I mean, we're talking about so how much do you think you have to raise if you were to become Mayor Paul Vallas? How much more money do you have to spend on the police budget for personnel, for vehicles, right? Because that's a constant struggle.
So let me respond. Right now, the mayor has in his budget 13,600 police officers. Of course, he hasn't filled all those vacancies. And I've said we need 14,200. And I basically said, you know, let me answer the question by basically saying that when I was city budget director, we had almost 14,000 officers on the street back in the 90s. We never paid more than $38 million in overtime, and in current dollars, inflation adjusted, that's $58 million. Well, they've been spending $150, $160, $170 million in overtime. The overtime savings alone will come close to providing the additional funding that would be needed to fill those additional positions. So at the end of the day, I mean, how much overtime are they paying to keep an additional 1,500? Officers on the street through the holidays, or to basically suspend all a leave or vacation and to keep people walking around in uniform.
Very quickly, before we let you go, because we're short on time here. So, other than obviously the crime thing is top of mind for everybody.
Absolutely.
There's a quality of life issue in Chicago, though, too, that is becoming burdensome for people. I was just talking to a guy this morning in the aftermath of all of this who was like, listen, he lives in the city, lives in, you know, like the North Lincoln Park, Lakeview, that area. And his son got a really good job, can't afford to live where near his dad because the taxes are too high. The property taxes, when you combine that with the price of that housing stock, it just it makes it impossible for families. And these are people of means. So how are we able to attract a middle class tax base when this city is expensive and the services are not as great as they are in other places?
Yeah. How much time do I have?
Give me your emotional reaction.
All right. So let me just say that. Look, We are rapidly becoming an unaffordable city. And let me tell you that many of the big economic development initiatives, many of those, like Lincoln Yards, where they're going to build 30, 40, 50, 70-story high-rises, you know, like condominiums and apartment buildings. I mean, just imagine the gentrification impact that that's going to have on a community. Because as you pointed out, you know,
you're not gentrifying there. There was a steel mill there. There's no gentrification there. That's not gentrifying.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen is as you overdevelop certain areas, it's going to further drive the property values higher. So what you have in many communities is you have rising property taxes. And, you know, when you go out there and you overdevelop certain areas, it drives up the cost. So even middle and even upper-income families are impacted by the fact that it's getting more expensive to live and your property taxes are
soaring. Well, you definitely want people, you want housing stock. You want it, and a development like that is a genius development because it's replacing a steel mill in an already overpriced
area. I'm not saying that it isn't, but basically saying that you can create a billion-dollar TIF, okay? And you know, when you create a TIF, particularly in an area that is already experiencing growth in property taxes, all you're doing is shifting the tax burden to individuals who are not in the TIF. And then secondly, you know, the issue even within the community is how big are these towers going to be? What's going to be the impact on infrastructure? I'm not saying that you don't develop the areas. I was speaking to your point,
yeah.
The point that you were making about you cited the example of that one individual, certainly an individual earning a decent income, also being affected by the cost of living in his communities.
Right.
I mean, you go to the wards on the north side, and people are complaining about their dramatic increases in assessed valuation. They're worried that they could be taxed out of their homes.
Correct.
So, you know, so one of the things that I have said very quickly,
yes.
is to say, you know, not only have I laid out some ideas on how you can loosen the market so that you can create more affordable housing, so that you can have more supply than demand, which will drive costs down, but I also talked about the need to really cap individual property tax increases so that no one is experiencing 10, 15, 20% increases in their property taxes, so that the increases are more manageable so people can make adjustments. And in my affordable housing and what I call affordable living plan, which I've begun to articulate, you're going to see how I intend on doing that and what the financial implications would be.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Paul.
Paul Vallis.
All right, thank you.
He wants to be the guy that we get mad at in April.
Swear at, I think you said,
swear at, exactly. Thank you. Right after we swear
happen.
In, we swear at. Thank you, Paul.